the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. As we always do, I would like to remind all of our listeners that sometimes our conversations in the podcast are difficult to hear and especially difficult for survivors of trauma. So we encourage you to care for your safety and well-being. That might mean reaching out for emotional support from a family member or friends or a counselor or a hotline, or doing something lovely for yourself afterwards, like a long hot bath. Additional resources can be found on the Take Back the Night Foundation website. We'll give you that address at the end of the podcast.
Thanks so much, Claire. And our very amazing guests today, as if not all our guests are amazing, they always are, incredible journeys and stories. We are going to speak with Stephanie, and I always just let everyone introduce themselves the way they like to say, you know, where are you at this moment? Where did you grow up? A little bit about your growth path as a human.
Great. Thank you so much, Katie and Claire, for having me today. My name is Stephanie Candelaria. I'm also known as La Mera. I'm a Latina survivor, educator, and musician. I grew up in San Juan Bautista, a Mamutsun tribal land, and I currently live in Los Angeles, occupy Tongva land. You can probably hear in the background, I'm currently at Dodgers Stadium, where my band is going to be playing later today. So we've got some fun music in the background. Wow. Hopefully it doesn't detract too much.
No, it's only great. Making it more exciting,
love
Stephanie.
It.
Nothing like flying from moment to moment in life, like many of us do, whether emotionally or physically.
Absolutely.
All right. So anything else about your background? So you grew up, do you have siblings? Do you?
I have two beautiful stepsisters, 16 and 20. They currently live in Mexico, but we actually just got news this week that they were approved for their resident interview. So that they can become permanent residents here in the United States. And we're hoping to have them home for the holidays. I've got a wonderful mother. She raised me by herself. Young mom, Latina mom. I have a great dad, you know, who lives out of state, but we have a really lovely connection and relationship. I grew up in a really big family in a very, very small town, rural town. In Central Coast, California. I also grew up doing a lot of theater. My family has a background in playwriting and theater. So, you know, my track towards becoming a musician was a relatively easy one compared to some folks who don't have supportive family. You know, for folks who choose to a life in the arts, because I was surrounded by people who are artists, you know, just a lot of support from their end throughout my journey.
Was there, when you were surrounded by them, clearly you're a rock star yourself, Stephanie. And was there any one particular person that really just clicked with you? Or was it just the cacophony literally of humanity and being immersed in that space?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. But, you know, my mom is also a vocalist. She sang salsa, throughout my childhood. So I really grew up, rehearsing with her, you know, in the car, memorizing lyrics, going to rehearsals and studio and shows. I would, you know, this was the 90s, so they would let me sleep backstage behind the club.
I'm picturing you on some random sofa.
Yeah.
It was like half stage prop and half like...
Yes.
Anyone can use this, and I hate to hear. I always hate to think, because having been in so many similar spaces as Claire too, with her theater background, you know, just from all the television sets to the movie sets to all the places, when you're a young person, you don't think about all the things that may happen on the sofa,
yeah.
including you as a young girl napping. But as we get older, we realize there's a whole journey of that sofa that is untold secrets.
Theater sofa could be a whole sitcom. Like,
yeah. For sure.
I think we got it.
For
we
sure.
Got it. Theater sofa. Yeah. That,
yeah.
That backstage green room couch that has seen tons of folks,
yeah.
you know.
The green ring. Yeah,
yep. I love it. And the treasure treats of some sort of random assortment of candies or snack foods that was ever changing. And the, you know, when you're little, you're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to get now? Like, what can I try next?
I know, it's almost like a vending machine. Who might I need?
Yeah, with no control and no money. It's just like random assortment. But I think that's really telling because I know you're going to take us on your amazing journey, Stephanie. But I kind of like, as I read about your bio to prepare and learn about you, I was thinking there must be something about your early years that prepared you to be the rock star you are and also go through the trauma you have. And it must have been some sort of way of being able to negotiate unpredictability and just go with the flow. And also, you know, I'm curious about one thing as we start, which is how, as a young person, did you learn about trust? Because you talked about the community that you were immersed amongst and the talent and the draw. But I think when we become survivors, we start to close off our trust. And I think that's really interesting. I usually don't ask that question until much later in our interview, but I think it's really interesting for you to reflect upon it and what your sense of trust was as a young person.
That's such a lovely question. You know, I mean, we're born completely vulnerable and having to completely rely on and trust the folks who are raising us to do a good job. And I think that, you know, the bond that I had with my mom, like I said, she was a single mom. She was quite young. In a lot of ways, we kind of grew up together. And we have quite a unique relationship because of that. But she was just above and beyond, still to this day. Anything I needed, comfort, or, you know, she would go without eating if I was hungry and if we didn't have enough money. Between her, I think also my grandmother was a really big part of my life when I was young because, you know, my mom was working like three jobs and performing and, you know, just trying to make ends meet. So I had two really strong women in my life who brought me up to be a very strong person, vocal, but also, you know, able to be vulnerable with them. I think that relationship really, really grounded me. And, you know, when I did experience sexual assault as a child, of course, that foundation was shaken. I don't think it was ever completely destroyed. But it was an interesting journey because, you know, the assault that I experienced was I was raped by a family member.
I just want to back up before we talk about the story. Just one last question. And then I think we're ready. When you say you have two lovely women who supported you, how were they different or similar in your mind? If you could think about that, because one of the themes, Stephanie, which is why I'm talking about this, is so many times on the podcast, we're talking to people who have they either have no support, they long for support, and they don't even know what support might look like or feel like because they never had it. And what I'm hearing you just say is something so important. So I don't want to leave it quite
yet.
Yeah, I know. What that meant, you know, you talked about like we're born so vulnerable, but as you, the two women, what were examples of the different ways in which they supported you? Like, let's start with your mom.
My mom is such a special person. She really did her best to make my childhood magical. Mm-hmm. So like, she went above and beyond for all of my birthdays. They all had themes. You know, our house was the party house for sure. She was really into like Easter bunny, you know, all the magic of childhood. She was all about it. And I think she was more devastated than I was when I finally was like, Mom, Santa doesn't exist. Like, get out of here. She was like so upset about that because she really did so much to make me feel like I was living in this world of beauty and wonder and magic. Mm-hmm. And every day with her, you know, we would go on these little adventures. We would drive through all the fancy neighborhoods and be like, someday, mija, we're going to get there. You know, there's this forest that we would drive through every day on our commute to work and school. Where she was like, yeah, mija, this is the 100-acre wood. This is where Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh. And I would always be just like looking out the window like, I'm going to see Piglet one of these days.
I love that. But that's a testimony to like also, you know, the beatitude of what a really idealistic, like all of us would want your mom to be our mom. To, you know, not to... Because the longer you can delay the hardship of reality, the more we grow the dreamer and visionary in ourselves. And, yes. You know, the longer we have to sit and dream instead of truncate our vision by hardship is just a priceless, there's no way to put a tag on that, you know? So she was giving you the space and latitude, it sounds like, to grow your dreams and your imagination. So that's like, oh my God, that's so cool. So how did the, you know, you said there were two. So what was the other experience?
My grandma, you know, we also have a really beautiful bond. I'm lucky that she's still around. She's a gardener. She grew up working in the fields. She had a family. She was one of 12 children. They were migrant workers for almost all of her life. I don't think she stopped working in the fields until she was in her 20s.
Oh my God.
And my mom also, I'm actually the first generation who has never worked in the fields, in my family. And I'm very blessed that, you know, the hard work of all the people who came before me can allow me to be here today at Dodger Stadium. But my grandma, she has a really strong connection with land. It's from her that I really have strong roots in our indigenous ancestry, ancestral ways of knowing, you know, indigenous ways of healing, connection to herbs and plants, flowers, you know, the seasons. She spends all of her time in her garden and is so in tune with her soil and the things that she's growing and what's in season at any given moment. And so as a kid, you know, when I would end up staying at my grandparents' house a lot when my mom was working and it was, you know, summer break or something. And we spent time in the garden, you know, and she's very quiet. Doesn't say a lot, but she has a laugh that just, oh my God, her cackle. I love it. It lights up a room. But so that was really the basis of our relationship and still is to this day. Whenever I go to visit her, we go visit in the garden and she shows me, you know, what's new, what's growing now. Oh, I got this lovely new, you know, peach tree or something. I mean, so I think that a lot of my groundedness through trauma and through, you know, just life came from, I think, a combination of both of them, the magic and fantasy and childlike wonder from my mom and the grounded like respect and love for nature and all living things around us. It was kind of just like the two stars.
No. Stephanie, you had the moon, the sun and the stars and the celestial from your mom.
Yes.
And you had the roots and beautiful soil of the earth from your grandma. I mean, gosh, you had almost all the four planet, you know, the four alignments, yes. The earth, air, water, fire, you know, you had them. So that was so gorgeous. And I hate to leave it one more thing. Your grandma and mom, because we're going to get to your story in just a second, but now that you painted this portrait, was it ever the case that you felt not like silly fights with them, like over trivia, like I want chocolate, you want vanilla, you know, I don't know. Like you don't get a cell phone until whatever, like not stuff like that, but like stuff like true trauma or anger. If I don't know if neither of them expressed that and you always felt safe. Or did they make you feel safe even if we disagreed or had a bump however big or wide, we could get through it. You know, that's a big rock, a solid human.
Absolutely. I can't think of anything particularly with my grandma, any kind of big moments of challenge. But with my mom, that's actually a really big part of my story is, when I finally did tell her about what had happened to me, there was a lot of backlash and like victim blaming. And, I felt completely just unsafe and unheard. And till, relatively recently, we've been doing a lot of really great work together these last, I want to say maybe 5 years, and have healed a lot of that pain and trauma, and our relationship is even more deep and nuanced and lovely than it ever was before. But it took a long time for us to get back to that like vulnerable place, because it definitely felt, for a long time I carried around this sense of like betrayal, you know, from someone who has been so important to me throughout my entire life.
Well, then let's talk about what happened, and I'll turn it over to Claire to help navigate that part of your story. But, you know, I usually, Stephanie, I say what brings you to your microphone as a survivor. So now we're finally there. But I love that we talked a lot about all those other things to preface it, because it might give context for some of our listeners. So go ahead. What happened?
Okay. I think that as a child, so we talked about me growing up in a theater family. There were always a lot of people around everywhere at my family's house, at our house, like we were the party house, you know, which was lovely. And I wouldn't trade that childhood for anything. But, you know, things happen. So when I was a very, very small girl, I was raped by the son of some, you know, someone in the theater circle, and didn't tell. I was so scared to tell my mom. I remember hiding my underwear, and she found them eventually because I think she was changing my sheets or something. She found them, and she was so angry and I interpreted it as her being angry at me. But, you know, she went into fierce mama bear mode and was like out to get this person. And I was so young that I didn't realize, I just misinterpreted her anger as something towards me. And we didn't talk about that for a very long time. But so then when I mentioned that, because it sets up when I was 14, she had gotten remarried. Her husband had a son. He was 32 years old and he groomed me. For the course of several months. And then eventually, you know, started having sex with me. At first it was just so confusing because I grew up without siblings. And we did have a really like, you know, it's grooming, right? I was like, oh my gosh, it's so great to have a brother and someone to talk to. He's so cool, this and that. So when the rape first started happening, I was really confused and unsure. Like, I didn't know what to think. And over time, it went on for quite a while. Over time, I started just not sleeping. I was having extreme like anxiety and mental health issues. He would never use protection. So I was constantly at Planned Parenthood to try to get like Plan B pills, you know, or and testing, like, because he was also a raging alcoholic. Over time, I stopped, like I started locking my door, and there was a night when he attempted to break down my door. And I was just in my room, like freaking out. Thankfully, my mom finally left that guy, and him and his son both got out. She had no idea that was happening. Their room was up a set of stairs from where we slept, my room and his room. And it was like soundproof. So they had no clue. And I just remember she was going through it too, because her husband was also an alcoholic. He was abusive, you know, verbally and physically with her. And she was suffering. Like there was one night where him and his son went out and she called over some of our family members to just wait up with her in case they tried to get into the house. And I remember thinking like, God, everybody here is just like, feeling so bad for her, but like fucking No one cares about, like, why am I freaking out? Like, no one's even bothering to ask. Mm-hmm. They all think that it's just, you know, I'm just worried about my mom, which of course I was, but I was just like, why is nobody seeing these signs in me? And she was so preoccupied, obviously, with what was happening with her, you know, being hit and pushed around, that she just didn't notice what was going on with me. And unfortunately, that, you know, little four-year-old me, that fear that I remembered because she was so angry, I never told her for years because I was like, I don't want her to be mad at me. And she's going to question things because we, you know, I was at one point very close with my stepbrother. And I feel like she's going to assume that I was into it.
Can I interrupt you for a sec? Thank you for sharing that story. And I know it was not easy. The first time you were raped, you said you were very young. Was that when you were four? Because you mentioned the four-year-old child.
I'm sorry?
You mentioned you were the four-year-old child. Yeah. So at that point, so this was one of the people who came to your house. Did your mom take you to get any kind of medical attention or anything? Or is it something that she just sort of handled?
She handled it on her own. She didn't find out until like a week later. And I mean, even to this day, people are shocked to hear that rape kits are free, you know? So I think she just didn't even know that there were options for like medical treatment or care.
Sure.
And it had also several days had passed, you know, by the time she finally found my hidden underwear. So she handled it on her own, you know, and tried to take care of me as best as she could.
Yeah. Okay. And so when this stepbrother of sorts started grooming you and assaulting you, did it feel like this is just sort of normal?
It didn't feel normal. It was very, very confusing. Okay. Because I would, and also an unfortunate thing that happens to a lot of survivors of sexual assault, especially ongoing, you know, like someone close to you assault, he made me have my first orgasm. So that was, I was like, wait, so that must mean that I like it. It just did a number on my mental health, and it took, several weeks for me to finally be like, okay, this is not okay. Like, I don't care. And he would use it against me, like, well, I made you orgasm, so like, you're into this. And it took me a while to finally start being like, no, dude, like, this is not okay. And that's when things started to get violent. Mm.
So, and thank you for bringing that up, because I know that for many survivors, even when it's a stranger who breaks into the house,
right,
that they can have an orgasm. And it's so confusing. So thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of people don't understand that this is an involuntary
response.
Your
body's just doing what your body was designed to do, you know?
And men who are assaulted have the same, you know, confusion.
Absolutely.
If they have an erection, I say all you have to do is point a gun at a guy and he'll get a hard on. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't take much. So your family's history and the experiences of your mom, and you talked about your mom and your grandmother and everyone really working on the margins, working in fields, and you're the first not to. Even from what I understand about the Latinx community, that understanding the resources that are available is pretty far. How do you think that impacted your experience and what your mom understood?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I mean, you know, in both of their cases, with their own experience with assault, there was nowhere to go. There was no one to tell. And in fact, you know, there was real danger of getting in serious trouble because they were family members that assaulted them. So when I was a little girl, you know, we lived in a very, very small town. I was around the same age as my mother was when she was first assaulted. We didn't have a clinic. You know, the closest hospital was a half an hour drive, which, you know, when you're living paycheck to paycheck and hustling jobs, like, there just isn't that kind of expendable money. I mean, it doesn't sound, but like, just the gas to get to the hospital in the next nearest town was like a real consideration. But also, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people just are not aware that when sexual assault happens or domestic violence happens, there are free medical resources that can be accessed by folks. But we didn't know that. You know, my mom certainly didn't. I mean, I was having a conversation with her recently, and we were talking about a case of one of my students, and I said, yeah, you know, I had to escort her to the hospital for a forensic exam. And she was like, oh my God, that must have been so expensive. And I was like, no, Mom, like, it's free. And she was just astonished. So beyond just like the, you know, larger population, a lot of people don't know that there are free resources, including legal and mental health resources. But just that first step, the forensic exam, we had no idea. You know, even when I was in high school, we were living in a larger city by then. My mom, you know, was making relatively good money. We had good health insurance. I didn't know that I could access resources. And even when I did, I mentioned that I was going to Planned Parenthood on a regular basis to get Plan B medicine, or excuse me, the Plan B pill. You know, they ask you all those questions, like, are you being harmed at home? Are you safe? I always said no. And just was like, no, you know, I was having sex with my boyfriend and we didn't use a condom because I didn't want to trigger a phone call to my mom because I was a minor. And there was still that fear that, like, oh my God, she's gonna think that we're like dating or something. She's not gonna understand. Even, I guess, to wrap up that thought, even when I did have those resources, I was far too scared to access them.
Can I ask a different question, Stephanie? Not just about resources and access. I think really importantly, you were also accessing, women's health care in terms of, you know, gynecological services and pregnancy planning. And sometimes I always think about, I kind of think about that aspect of what you were just talking about in three ways. One is financial access, like, because when I'll just state this, I had no money and no parent support. So everything from about 19 on, I had to navigate with $0. Like, I just figured it out. I didn't even have emotional support. So I went to Planned Parenthood too, just to get care, because it was the smallest amount of money and they didn't ask a lot of questions. So one is financial. The second one, though, is religion and faith. And my third one is being Latina. So I think all three of those are really important things to think about with regard not just to the topic at hand, which is like, oh my gosh, unplanned pregnancy because of abuse or assault, but I'm curious how you navigate that triage of like no money, no support, scared, I'll add a fourth, you're a minor. You know, so I apologize, I didn't say that too, but I think that narrative is imperative. Narrative is imperative right now, you know, because like, if you can, I mean, that's a lot of things. And I don't know if you could say one was more important than the other, but I think talking about all four on this podcast is really helpful for our listeners to think about, because you navigated all of them. You went through all four thought processes and how they impacted you. And I'm curious because, you know, clearly you have so much experience and thoughtfulness around this issue. How do you think, you know, so we have age, we have religion, we have your identity, your cultural identity and background, and we have money. That's like a big four-legged table right there, Stephanie. How do you feel about those four things and how do they impact? And is any one more important in your mind than another, or are they all equally urgent?
I mean, yeah, I think they're just so intertwined that there's really no way to disentangle, like, by measure of importance. I'm a Latina. I was raised Catholic. My family is very religious. Also come from a family that historically, we have never had money, like generationally, we have never had any kind of wealth to rely upon. And then, yeah, being a young person, I mean, being a young person in a world of all of these adults, something I didn't mention before, I was often the only child in the room, you know, whether it was at the theater or at these gigs, you know, growing up, going to my mom's gigs. So it was a very strange place to be as a child because I was in this world of adults. So in a lot of ways, I think that it made me feel even less like I have nowhere to go to because now all of these adults are suspect almost. But yeah, I mean, I just think that there's just so much shame and stigma, especially in Latino cultures. There's this 500-year history of specifically sexual assault being used as a tool of conquest. We know that it has been documented. It's happening in Ukraine right now. This is right. Still an ongoing thing. So this legacy of both our land and our bodies being completely just brutalized and stolen and raped and pillaged, lingering down and passing down generation to generation where we just have no words. Like the words in Spanish for sexual assault and rape, no one knows those. Like it's even coming down to a matter of language. Those are not commonly used words. I mean, that's a whole lot.
Talk about that for a second, Stephanie, because that's the work I've been working with China and India, Nigeria. I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning a few months ago to speak to Nigeria about changing the definition that they have criminally for rape, because it's still only women can be raped. And the definition about it's forcible. It's marital rape is not, you know, there's a lot of excuses. Like you can rape almost anyone unless you do this really extreme thing. You know, you grab a rich woman off the street. And so we're living with a culture, a worldwide, you know, so I think we should talk about that for just a second. I mean, that's your passion. So what do we want to address there?
Yeah, I mean, it just brings up a lot of questions for me. Like matters of language are clearly so important as finally folks are now waking up to realize language matters, like pronouns, all of that stuff. But so, yeah, when it comes to Spanish, which, you know, I learned both English and Spanish as a kid. It wasn't my primary language for sure, but like there just aren't words that exist for that. There's like medical terms or, you know, a lot of like metaphor beating around the bush. But a lot of those metaphors like, oh, she was taken kind of thing. They imply they're not specific and they imply a different kind of violence for sure. You know, being taken or abducted is absolutely real. But it comes down to like when we don't have specific language for things, there's no way for us to have meaningful conversations about what those actually look like in reality. So, you know, trying to talk to a grandparent or an elder in the family in Spanish about what happened to you, like literally you find yourself speaking in metaphor and euphemism, which is not helpful, and it's in fact humiliating.
What do you mean by humiliating? Like you feel like you have to denigrate yourself?
Because a lot of these like euphemisms and metaphor imply like a type of culpability on the part of the person who was assaulted and harmed. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like euphemisms like, oh, you know, her skirt was up too high. Like there's a lot of victim blaming in the language. So yes. When you're trying to explain something to someone and they're like, oh, this, and then they use one of the popular like metaphors or euphemisms, like, no, that's not at all what I'm trying to say. And so then you find yourself like justifying and over explaining, when that shouldn't have been the conversation, like it completely sidetracks the conversation into something else. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. And I know Claire and I are respectful of your time so you can go perform. But let's just like think about the last things that you really want to address. And Claire might have some more questions, but first I come back to you, Stephanie. What have we missed in your journey and your story that we should still cover?
Well, I think it's actually great that we were just talking about language and conversation, specificity of language, because that's actually a big part of my life now as a survivor, is opening up platforms specifically in Latina communities in our language, using music that we love and can relate to and can have heard our entire lives, like cumbia, salsa, like these are the rhythms of our people, utilizing all of that to bring up conversations about all of this stuff that we no one talks about, or they don't have specific language to talk about, or there's a lot of shame or stigma around having conversations like that. So using this platform as a musician, a vocalist, and a lyricist, to really just pinpoint in, okay, where are the things that we're missing? So, you know, we've got, you know, some lighthearted songs, some love songs for sure, but almost all of our music, our repertoire is really, really based in like a decolonization mindset. So I've got music around like catcalling. I've got music around, you know, transgender awareness and celebration. I'm releasing a new album next year that's called Di Su Nombre, which is Say Her Name, the whole Say Her Name movement of the missing and murdered Indigenous women. It's an epidemic of sexual violence that Latina and Indigenous women are experiencing, both in Mexico and here in the United States. So just using my platform to, yeah, speak up about those things. And the way that I do it is because, you know, I specifically utilize Spanish language and cumbias rhythms and salsa rhythms because that's what people love. It feels good to them. It feels like home to them. And so that's the best way to have a conversation about something difficult or challenging. Like, I'm going to get you dancing first. And then, like, we're going to start, oh, she said that. Oh, my gosh. Hey, this is what I think it's about. Like, you know, just sparking even just the thought or the question so that those conversations can start happening. And so doing things like this, sharing my message on podcasts and interviews, you know, with magazines and blog, like, I'm out here trying to really talk about this stuff because I know that we as Latina people are a beautiful culture, but we have a lot of work to do when it comes to supporting, you know, women and gender nonconforming folks, because we exist and we have the right to feel safe in our own communities.
I love the fact that you are using your music, and it's the rhythm and the music that catches people. As just like with rap and hip hop, you get the rhythms and the music, and then you start hearing the lyrics, and it's almost like you're sneaking those messages in at first, and then they realize what it's about, which is fabulous. What is the name of your band, and tell us the name of your first album so people can look for it, or, you know.
Yes. So the band is La Mera Candelaria, LAMERA, two words. Usually that's enough to find me. You know, I'll be there with my flower and my big earrings and my hair. We're on Spotify, we're YouTube, all the things. But so this is actually going to be our fifth release, the one that I was just referencing. It's going to be called Di Su Nombre, which means Say Her Name. But you can still find, like our release from 2 years ago, we actually did in partnership with a local LA organization, the Violence Intervention Program. They work with survivors and communities in East Los Angeles. So that three-track EP, the first song is specifically about survivors. It's called Florecer, which means to flourish. And it came out of this kind of internal reflection and internal dialogue of like, why is the word survivor? It's not feeling like enough to me. I don't want to just survive. I want to thrive. I want to flourish. And so I wrote this song, Florecer, as I said, in connection with the Violence Intervention Program, amazing program, look them up, to just support survivors and offer an anthem to like, yes, you are here and your scars are there too. And they're part, you know, we're out here surviving more. We're out here doing more than just surviving. We're out here thriving and making our stories heard. So yeah, you can find all of that and lots of lovely articles about that album as well online. So look us up if you want to hear some good dancing music specifically for and about surviving.
We're about to dance right with you onto Dodger Stadium.
Yes.
Promise. Well, oh my gosh, this was amazing. We are so grateful for your hot car self outside of the big stadium. And we're all rooting for you as you head out there to get everyone up and dancing. The last question I quickly have is, you know, we always like to name our, so most of our listeners probably don't know this, but we like to name our podcast, I do, after something you absolutely adore. So if there's something that you absolutely adore, other than looking at that red rose in your hair, or both of them, maybe you're the roses in hair. I kind of like to think about your singing too.
Yeah, I think of cumbia or salsa or...
What do you prefer?
Yeah, something about dancing. Like, I'm trying to think of something that doesn't sound like a
cliche
Jehovah's Witness missionary thing.
All right,
like, dancing to thrive, or like, you know, dancing towards something.
Thank you so much for joining us, Stephanie, and Claire has closing for our guests. Go ahead.
Yes. So thank you again, Stephanie, for joining us. This was so much fun talking with you and for sharing your story and your healing. So, and also thank you to all our volunteers who make this podcast possible, and to all of our listeners who are here bearing witness. Again, please help other survivors by subscribing to the podcast. Please share it with everyone you know and on your social media, and follow us on our Facebook pages and Instagram page. So if you need support and don't know where to find it, visit takebackthenight.org for a list of resources and how to reach our legal support hotline. And remember, self-care is essential to healing and to thriving, and so is music.
Yes.
Yep. Thank you again, Stephanie, for joining us. For our listeners, please continue to join us and continue all of your own journeys toward healing and thriving. Take care until next time. Bye-bye.